Nations, everybody, welcome back to the channel for this episode of John Campia Open Mic. The mic is open. The floor is yours. What do you want to talk about? That's all we're going to discuss here, is taking your comments, questions, theories, thoughts, and opinions about all the things going on in this world of movies, movie news, TV, and streaming that we love so much. It's good to have you guys here on this afternoon. And we're going to take your questions. Now, there are two different ways you can get a question or a thought addressed on the show. The first way is if you're not watching the show live, you're watching this pre-recorded or it's 3 a.m. where you live, whatever, you can go anytime 24/7 over to our tip link, is simply at streamelements.com/johncampia/tip. And you can leave a comment, theory, question, or topic there. Or the second way, if you are watching live, you can simply use the super chat feature. It's in the live chat and fire that on in. And whichever way you send them in, if your topic or question is appropriate to be used on the show, we will address it here on the show. I got Ray Ora joining me here.
Hey, what's up?
Jonathan Voico's here.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody.
What was the Madonna song you were singing earlier, Ray, about Ezra Miller?
Technically, I was singing.
Yeah.
Was that you that was doing it?
Yeah.
What was it?
It was nothing. I'm not going to be put on the spot, but
I can't remember the words now.
Yeah,
but it was to the melody of I'm gonna keep my baby, like Madonna.
Oh yeah, yeah. Ezra won't speak.
Ezra's in trouble.
Yeah,
that's right.
I can't say a thing. I'm choking a baby.
Yeah, so who knows if anyone in the chat knows that song? Baby. Anyways,
yeah, that's right. That's going back to when we were kids.
Ray and I start to sweat when you bring up anything we've brought up off camera. We're like, what? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. our first reaction to anything being brought up about stuff we talked about off camera should be denial.
It's just a look like this.
Yeah, this one. Yes. Yeah, like, no idea. Oh my God, you put Serpentor.
Yeah, baby. I bet you nobody in the chat knows Serpentor.
Nobody has any idea why that snake guy is in the bottom corner of today's show.
Anybody who knows him knows the beauty of Serpentor. The best G.I. Joe ever.
Just don't tell him Sergeant Slaughter's here. Yeah. Oh no. Anyway, sorry, we've already gone off the rails. We haven't even started. Good to have you guys here. Now, listen, we're going to spend most of our time here taking your questions. But before we do, I want to talk about this. It's a story we covered in our podcast earlier today. So Indiana Jones, a number of months ago, I would have thought, and I was saying, was going to be a big, big film, real big. I thought I was going to have a big opening weekend. I thought it was going to be a really, really big film. Now, I hadn't seen it yet, but James Mangold is directing. I think James Mangold is probably a top five best director working in the world right now when you look at his resume. And so I had a lot of faith and belief in this film. Now, apparently Lucasfilm and Disney had a lot of belief in the film too, because they decided to take it to the Cannes Film Festival in France, believing, I guess, that they were going to take advantage of huge early buzz and pop, and they're going to get this just, you know, huge adoration coming out of the prestigious Cannes Film Festival. Well, in the words of the great sound effect, wah, wah, didn't quite work out that way, as a lot of negative reviews came out, and what they were hoping would probably be in the high 80s, low 90s, actually turned into a 50%. 50% as of this moment, and Ray, you can double check our facts, but as of this moment, I believe the Rotten Tomatoes meter, with the big outlets that travel to the Cannes Film Festival to look at these movies, whatever, it's got a 50%. And ever since then, the tone and narrative surrounding this film have totally changed. Right? Before that, when I'd be in movie theaters and an Indiana Jones trailer would play, it would consistently be the biggest pop in the theater that I would be in out of all the trailers that would play.
It's at 53%.
It's at 53. It's gone up. Last I checked, it was 50. Honest way to 90.
Yep.
53 was but the first step. Serpentor is going to get it there with its weather dominator. The weather dominator will make this a 90. So ever since that has happened, the outlook's been different. I haven't heard the pop in the theaters anymore when the Indiana Jones trailer would play. And listen, now Deadline came out today with a report saying that right now Indiana Jones is projected to make $60 million opening weekend. Now, for some, for some movies, that would be pretty good. But for a movie that reportedly cost $300 million to make, which is not as much as Fast X at 340, but still, that's one of the most expensive films in history. You bet your ass they need more than $60 million opening weekend, like a hell of a lot more. Put it in context. Little Mermaid made $95 million opening weekend. The animated film Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse made $120 million opening weekend. And right now they're saying the projection is for Indiana Jones to make 60 opening weekend.
Has this character just gotten old? I mean, not as in literally, but I
well,
mean,
yes, literally. But
because yeah. look, the first Iron Man came out mm-hmm. May 2nd, 2008, the start of like the MCU.
Right.
Crystal Skull came out May 22nd of the same year, 2008. We haven't had an Indiana Jones since then. And we've had this Marvel MCU thing in between Crystal Skull and this next one.
Yeah, we've had
fans
like 30,
have forgotten about
30 MCU yeah. films between yeah. the last
Indiana
Jones.
Fans have moved
film
on from like this adventure sort of ish character to this comic book.
I think there's two problems. The one problem is time, right? It's been a lot of time. Now, I still thought that would be fine. A second problem is that the last film that we got was Poodoo. It was awful. It was the Crystal Skull, which I actually still contend the Crystal Skull is actually not a bad little adventure film. It's just not a very good Indiana Jones film, if you know what I'm saying when I say that. And so that's the stink of Crystal Skull has just been marinating with everybody for like, what, almost 20 years, like 15
years.
So
what was the Indiana Jones film before Crystal Skull?
Last Crusade,
yeah,
which is my favorite Indiana Jones film.
Technically, you would think that would be the real Indiana, the last Indiana
In
Jones.
In my headcanon,
yeah.
The last Indiana Jones film is The Last Crusade.
Okay.
In my personal headcanon. But now you've got, it's been an awful lot of time. The last one was horrible. And now you got a third problem. Bad reviews at Cannes. And that apparently has changed the narrative. So with a film that's cost $300 million to make, like you're talking about and an impressive and expansive ad campaign, you're probably talking about a film that maybe doesn't need the $750 million that Fast X needed to break even. Well, $750 to $800 million of the Fast X, but you're probably talking $650 minimum to break even. God, probably closer to $700 million. I mean, it's, and if you're opening to $60 million, you ain't making $700 million. I mean, you brought up a good point earlier, Ray, about it will mostly depend now on what kind of international legs does it have. Like maybe Indy is still really big overseas. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question.
Well, the Crystal Skull, it made 60% of the its
box office domestic.
Yeah, it was I think $729 million. So
which was the 60, domestic or international?
That was international.
So most of its box office came from overseas.
Yeah.
I mean, if it can maintain that sort of thing, maybe it could do all right. But I am very worried about this. This film that I've believed in for a very long time, and I don't care. I mean, I'm still excited to watch it. They showed us 15 minutes of it at CinemaCon, and I thought
$790 million.
It made overseas, or total. Yeah.
No, total.
Total.
Okay, and
so
how much of that was international?
In international.
All right.
Yeah, but its budget was $185 million. I mean.
Yeah, it's. Now, look, I am still excited to see us. It's still Harrison Ford. The 15 minutes they showed us at CinemaCon, I thought were good. It's still James Mangold directing, and I have never not liked a James Mangold film. Well, there might have been one, but aside from that. So I am still maintaining some optimism, but even reading a lot of the reviews for it, including people who I know love Indiana Jones. Like I've read a couple of reviews from some of the critics from the bigger outlets that I know they really like Indiana Jones, and they were really excited to see this new Indiana Jones film. And they just crapped on it. And that, I'm not going to lie to you, that's taking some of the wind out of my sail. I'm still going to see it, clearly. Opening day, I'll be there. But it's worrying. And now I got to ask the question, how much money is this movie going to lose? Because I don't think it's going to break even.
Or how much is it going to show in the film that, you know how Harrison or Mr. Ford has been saying, oh, this is my last one. Don't let me get into another one of these films. Are we going to see that in this product? I mean, in this movie? Like that would be like, you know, why
like at his at like
chewing it in or, you know, how a lot of people were saying that Jennifer Lawrence in her last X-Men movie, it looked like she was just, you know.
Oh, but that's such a different situation, though, because Jennifer Lawrence was in a contract to do that many films. And she's getting like, this is something Harrison Ford hasn't done in 15 years.
Yeah.
right? And Harrison Ford, he's been doing a lot more acting lately, right? He's been doing a lot more. So I think he wanted to come back and do one more ride for Indiana Jones. He made it clear it would be his last ride. But then again, remember, George Lucas said that Last Crusade was the final Indiana Jones film. And then they did Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and said, that's it. And then they're coming back to do this one. And I don't know. I'm nervous, man. I don't care. I'm still looking forward to watching this movie.
Good, good. And I hope you like it.
I hope I like it too.
For an Indiana Jones fan, I can't say if I am one yet. I do like the action figures that I'm seeing coming out. But yeah, I've only seen the first one. I've only seen the first one and I loved it. So,
all right. Guys, with that down, let's get over and do what we are here to do, which is to take your comments and questions. We'll start off with the tippling questions that people sent in who aren't watching live. So, Jonathan, what do we got?
Okay. Kevin is first. Across the Spider-Verse is an incredibly constructed operatic masterpiece. The visual score, editing, writing, pacing, character development, the pure style of how those coalesce at key times has the gravitas of a biblical epic with the comedy innocence of a coming-of-age film.
It's exactly why...
Kevin, you should be paid for this.
It's exactly why I have no qualms with saying... Now, a lot of times I'll see a movie that I really like, and I'll go, okay, don't get me wrong, it's not going to win any Oscars, but this is a lot, right? I have no problem saying with a straight face, this movie needs to be nominated, not for Best Animated Film. It needs to be nominated for Best Picture because it is all of those things. It is absolutely all of those things. What they have made in a motion picture is nothing short of breathtaking. Beautiful characters, wonderful dialogue, great dynamics between the individual characters, a compelling story, a very complex narrative that we never feel lost in because it's told with such a deft hand. The story is told with such a masterpiece of a hand that even though it's a very complex and complicated story, we feel like we're coming right along with it. We never feel lost. We never feel confused. It is a brilliant, not animated film, not superhero film. It is a brilliant film that needs to be, I'm not saying win the Academy Award for Best Picture, but I'm saying it needs to be nominated for all the reasons you just mentioned. All right, what's next?
Okay, Ray is my spirit animal, says Indy 5 reviews all claim it's better than Skull, but was safe, no risks, familiar adventure and look, filled to the brim with nostalgia. It looks like they took the Force Awakens route and should be a crowd pleaser. Pacing as of now to 80 to 110 opening weekend. Thoughts?
That's not what I saw. Deadline is reported pacing 60 million opening weekend.
I mean, if they do 90, then that's pretty good. But
I mean, 90
compared to 60, I'm saying.
Be better. It would be better. Yeah. I'd still say a little short. I mean, for a movie, when you make a movie that's $300 million to make, look. $100 million opening weekend is not the standard, right? But when you make your movie for $300 million, you're kind of hoping to get to that triple digit millions of dollars opening weekend. So 90 would still be short, but 60 would be, I mean, let's call it what it is. 60 would be disastrous if it does open to that.
I'm calling it this. There's a very good chance after you read that, I'm thinking that this is going to be my favorite Indiana Jones film. Dial of Destiny.
Well, it's only going to be the second one you watch.
They took the Force Awakens route, and that's like my favorite Star Wars movie.
All right, what's next?
Am I like the worst person ever?
Well, I'm sorry, it's just your take on it. All right, Kumbaya.
Am I the worst person ever?
No. No, but yes. I know people that love Crystal Skull, so it's fine. Kumbaya, my lord writes, studio gets 60% of domestic box office, much less globally, 25% from China. So to make $50 million, you need 80 domestic versus 200 in China. Huge $120 million difference. So Fast X has to go far relative to budget. Mermaid and Spider-Verse don't. Mermaid costs 200 plus 80 marketing.
By the way, people's estimations about what films need to make overseas is drastically off. It's drastically off. Some films in China, the studios get back 25-30%. Some. But because this is a complex set of guidelines and rules, and certain films can play in China and make 50%, 60% of it back. Some don't. It's a far more complicated thing than, but everybody just keeps throwing around that number. Movies in China only get 25% of the money back, and everybody just believes that. That's not actually true. There's a part of it that's true, but it's far more complex and much broader than that. That being said, let's just put it this way. Whatever way you like to break down the math, This movie needs to do better than it's being projected to do. And it's got to be better than what we're hearing that it is in order to do that. So I don't know, man. We're just gonna have to wait and see. All right, what's next?
Okay, we've got homie Sternvoid writes, I asked ChatGPT to make up a South Park episode, and the story was Superman, Batman, Robin, and Flash ask for the help of Randy Marsh in order to stop LeBron James and Mr. Peanut from taking over Earth and Jupiter. Already sounds better than Fast X.
It actually, I'm not going to say it sounds better than Fast X. I'm going to say it sounds like Fast X.
It does sound like
that, Mr. That Peanut. Pretty much sounds like Fast X Part 2.
It does
right
sound
there.
Like South Park.
I think Mr. That's Peanut, just, baby.
It just stole it from there. All right, what's next?
I mean, that could be an actual South Park. All right, Owen Mono has a two-parter and writes, if there are literally 10 or more movies that are better than Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, and knock it out of almost everyone's top 10 of the year, then clearly we are in a year of movies.
Probably meant the word best year. Yeah. Movies. Yeah.
The movies that I see dethroning Spider-Verse are Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon, The Creator, Mission Impossible Part 1, Equalizer 3, Dune 2, or Napoleon. What movies do you think has the potential to dethrone Spider-Verse as your favorite?
For every movie that's coming out has the potential to dethrone Spider-Man. That's the thing. Remember, Into the Spider-Verse, I thought looked awful. Right. So no matter what movie is coming out, whether you think it looks good or looks awful, every film coming out has the potential to dethrone Spider-Verse. I have a lot of excitement about all the movies that you listed there. I don't think all of them are going to beat out Spider-Verse. I mean, listen, that's just the thing. Across the Spider-Verse is so good that all of those films are going to have a hard time, not an impossible time, a hard time living up to Across the Spider-Verse. I don't care whether it's Killers of the Flower Moon or Napoleon or Oppenheimer or Dune 2 or whatever else. They've got their work cut out for them because to me, listen, I think I don't give scores to my movies. I've explained many times why. I just say what I think about a movie. I don't give it a 3 out of 4 stars or a 99 peanuts or a whatever. I don't do scores because scores are useless. But if I did give scores, let's say a 10 out of 10 rating or whatever. If I did give scores, I would give Across the Spider-Verse a 10 out of 10. And I maybe see one movie a year that I would give a 10 out of 10 to.
We saw one last night.
Transformers, Rise of the Beast, baby. 10 out of 10. Perfect score across the board. Look at that, Maximal. That's beautiful.
It's a patch they gave them.
They gave us all posters and patches.
Cinemark, baby. The new way to watch movies.
The new way. Zoe Ray is so obsessed with Cinemark after watching that movie last night. But I mean, I would maybe give one movie a year a 10 out of 10. I'm sure there have been years I wouldn't give any movies a 10 out of 10. And I have no doubt that I'm looking forward to all those other ones you listed, but I'd be shocked if more than one or two of them I would also give a 10 out of 10. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen them yet, but man, I've said this before. I will say it again. If Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse legitimately has 10 other movies come out this year that are legitimately better than Across the Spider-Verse, I will pronounce that this is the greatest year for movies in history.
Maybe even 4 movies that are better than it.
I mean, if there's like 3 movies better than Across the Spider-Verse, it's going to be one of my favorite movie years of all time. That's how good this movie is. So we'll see, though. A lot of year to go still. Still a lot of year to go. All right, what's next?
All right, we've got Sticks and Stones with a $20 tip. Thank you.
Thank you, Sticks and Stones.
Oscar Isaac broke a record. After playing 3 characters in different Marvel worlds, Apocalypse, Moon Knight, Spider-Man 2099, Mahershala Ali and Ryan Reynolds play 3 each too. I wouldn't change anything, but is there a point when it's too much?
Why? It's an actor playing a character. I whether they're playing a character in a comic book movie or in a political thriller or in a rom-com comedy or a period piece, I mean, it's just actors playing roles. It doesn't really matter. What was the 3 that Ryan Reynolds played?
I don't know. Deadpool.
Characters in what? Comic books?
In comic book movies. Like,
well, he was in Blade.
That's right. He was Hannibal King. He was Hannibal King in Blade.
And then obviously Deadpool.
And then Green Lantern.
Then Green Lantern.
Well, that was DC, though.
It does still comic book movies. Still Green.
Okay. I thought
Idris Elba's played a couple.
But he's never had like the front superhero one. Oh no, he was in Suicide Squad. He was a main character.
Yeah, Suicide, Idris Elba, and then Thor.
And I wouldn't even count vocal performances. I wouldn't count that, to be honest with you. So I'll still count the Oscar Isaac thing as two, playing Apocalypse and Moon Knight. But yeah, it doesn't matter to me. An actor is an actor. I mean, as long as they're not, it's not the same actor playing in the same cinematic universe too many times, unless there's makeup. I mean, what's the girl from Crazy Rich Asians? And she's the lead in Eternals.
Aquafina? No.
The lead girl in Eternals.
Gemma Chan.
Right? Gemma Chan is in the MCU twice.
Oh, yeah.
She's in Captain Marvel and she's in Eternals. But you can't recognize her in Captain Marvel, so that's okay. But other than that, I think it's perfectly fine. Yeah.
You know, you've got Chris Evans, who's Fox, and then Marvel.
Yeah, right. he was Human Torch.
Yeah, Human Torch.
We just need one guy to enter the comic book movie arena.
Who?
Pedro Pascal.
Yeah. Yeah, waiting on Pedro.
Been there yet. Game of Thrones, Star Wars.
We need him. Yeah. Find something for him.
All right, what's next?
Well, we'll work on it.
Maybe he can play Serpentor.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, actually, yes.
Ray is not impressed by my answer.
Come on.
I'm actually going to put him in a Serpentor costume right now.
You should.
Of course
you are. And you're going to eat your words.
Grab it where that one shot of him smiling. All right, James Argenta writes, bigger shock last scene. Rise of the Beast or Fury at end of Iron Man. We can't really say what it was.
But no, we can't say. I will say this. The thing that happens at the end of Rise of the Beast is very cool, but is not really much. You know what I mean? Like, it happens. Oh, cool, but it doesn't.
Reaction-wise, Rise of the Beast. Way over than the Iron
Man. 100%
from me. For me, not you. For me,
you're saying
reaction
all the way back. All
was
the way,
way
back,
bigger.
When was, Iron Man, the first Iron Man movie
I already knew about
out.
It before someone spoiled it for me. Before.
Oh, well, then that takes away. Then that takes.
See, that's a problem.
That's a legitimate question for you.
Yeah.
Because like back in the day when the first Iron Man came out and all of a sudden Nick Fury, they end the film with Nick Fury there and he mentions the Avengers Initiative. That changed the landscape. That changed everything.
Yeah, but
right?
Someone told me. So.
Yeah.
But the end of Rise of the Beast, which is really cool, it doesn't really change anything.
But
the funny thing is, they still didn't have MCU plans. Like, according to Feige, they threw that in as something fun and a little Easter egg, but they didn't have a grand scheme yet for the MCU.
I believe they did. I believe they did. Because it was very, very quickly that the next movie started coming out. Mm. So they had to already be in the planning process for it. Yeah. I mean, maybe what Feige meant was
like a grand scheme.
We didn't have all the details in place and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I would believe that. All right, what's next?
All right, Gabrielle writes, fun fact, excuse me, Travis Knight, the director of Bumblebee, is the son of Phil Knight, the co-founder of Nike, whom Ben Affleck just portrayed in Air.
I had no
idea. Wow.
Ray, fact check that.
Thank you for that. No, I'm believing it no matter what. Hold on.
Believing it no matter what. So I don't want to find out the fact. That's
I'm all in and whatever you guys
is
think.
Is that true?
So his brother's name is Ben Knight?
I don't know.
Is that what he said in the message?
No. He said his dad is Ben Affleck's character in Air.
Bill Knight.
Usually he comes up with, spouse, children.
How did? He's Travis the son Knight. Of the guy from Air, and you're like, so his name's Bob Knight and it's his brother?
No, it is his son.
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
That is,
so,
how have I not heard that before? That is fascinating.
Ben Affleck produced
that. Well,
Travis
then that's
Knight.
Why he didn't come back to direct the next Transformers movie. He's got enough money. He figured, wait a minute, why am I working? Why am I doing anything? Bill why Knight. Am I not just laying on a beach?
Hey, but he's successful.
Yeah, I mean, that guy did Kubo and the Two Strings, and then he did Bumblebee. Those are the only two movies that I know of his that I've seen, but they're both absolutely killer. They're both fantastic. All right, what's next?
All right, Checkmate and Nine Moves. All right. I just finished playing Detroit Become Human on PS4, and I wondered, could we ever see a TV series that tells the same story twice? Season one as a bad guy, then season two as a good guy, or is that too much?
I think it's too much. Like, I actually played that game.
That was with that Jesse, not Jesse, the guy with the The eyes.
Yes, the guy had eyes.
No, 100%. Like, you know, let me look it up. Sorry.
Jesse, with the nose, his eyes.
You know, the guy with the hands and well, all I know is that the lead guy was the guy from Grey's Anatomy. He wasn't the lead guy in Grey's Anatomy. I mean, the lead guy in the game was an actor from Grey's Anatomy. I can't remember the actor's name, but I don't know that you can do a television show that way. I don't know if that
Jesse Williams.
Is that the actor's name?
Yeah.
I never knew the actor's name.
Crazy eyes.
I mean, I think telling events from different points of view are great in scenes. I don't know if you could do a whole show based around that, though. Maybe. It could be interesting. All right, guys, listen. We're going to take a second here before we continue on and thank a couple of the sponsors of today's open mic, our friends at Honey and Mint Mobile. Today's episode of the John Campy Show is brought to you by Honey, the easy way to save when shopping on your iPhone or computer. Guys, more and more, we enjoy shopping online, whether it's on our phones or our computers. And how many times have you gotten to the checkout and seen that promo code box and thought, man, if I only had a promo code, I could save some money? Well, thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. Honey is the free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. So here's the situation. You're shopping online on one of your favorite sites. And when you go to checkout, the Honey button appears and all you have to do is click apply coupons. Then just wait a few seconds as Honey works its magic and searches for coupons it can find for that site that you're on. And if Honey finds working coupon, just watch the price drop. Recently, Ann and I were hanging out at home one evening and we decided to order in and the Honey button appeared. I was able to apply a coupon and I actually saved like $6 or $7. It was that easy to use. And Honey doesn't just work on your desktop computer. It also works on your iPhone. Just activate it on Safari on your phone and save on the go. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out. And by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this show. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/Campia. That's joinhoney.com/Campia. We want to thank a sponsor of this video, Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, your utility bills and favorite streaming services, inflation is everywhere. Seriously, make it stop. Thankfully, there's one company out there that's giving you a much needed break. It's Mint Mobile. As the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, Mint Mobile lets you order from home and save a ton with phone plans starting at just $15 a month. You guys know that ever since I switched to Mint Mobile, I've been saving almost 70% a month over my old phone plan. For people looking for extra savings this year, Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for just $15 a month. By going online only and eliminating the traditional cost of retail, Mint Mobile passes the significant savings on to you. All of their plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. Switch to Mint Mobile and get premium wireless service starting at just $15 a month. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/Campia. That's mintmobile.com/Campia. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Campia. And thank you to our friends.
Left me with that.
And Honey and Mint Mobile for sponsoring this episode of Open Mic. All right, let's get back to it. What's next?
Suthius writes, 30 years of watching movies and shows. I, Suthius, just now discovered that Dennis and Randy are the Quaid brothers. Yep. Wow. Oh. You guys have similar examples.
I never knew Randy Quaid and Dennis Quaid were related.
Wait a minute. No, you're joking.
No, I never knew that.
Randy Quaid.
So like right now, Randy you just Quaid. Found out that Randy and
yeah,
Dennis
I've
Quaid
never,
are brothers?
I've never, they look nothing alike.
I know.
They look absolutely, is one of them adopted? And I asked that seriously. Is one of them adopted?
No.
I don't know, but I wouldn't ask them live on air.
Randy Quaid.
Yeah.
And it's is Dennis Quaid's brother.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Who's Randy Quaid?
I'm sorry. Some Independence Day.
Oh.
And National Lampoon's Vacation.
And yeah, okay. A little crazy.
Yeah, he's a little
nutty. I mean, I know, I mean, the Fine brothers are... Ralph Fiennes and his brother Joseph Fiennes are both world. Actually, I contend the Fiennes brothers are probably the best brother acting duo in Hollywood. I mean, they're both Academy Award level. They're both incredible. I mean, I was easy enough to put Jake Gyllenhaal and Maggie Gyllenhaal together because Gyllenhaal is not that common of a last name, so that one wasn't so hard. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Can you think of any? Like,
you got like Beau Bridges and Jeff Bridges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was an interesting one, but you could sort of see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. There are others, but I never knew the Quaits were brothers. I had no idea. That's hilarious. All right, what's next?
Okay, we've got Bobby Jackson who writes, I keep thinking about what you said about Sam Raimi and Spider-Man 3, but if his heart wasn't truly into his work, doesn't that make it impossible to make a good movie?
No, it's your job. It's your profession. You don't think there are days that you don't wake up where your heart's not really in? No, but you're a professional. You go, you do your job to your best of your ability, you execute, right? It's like, well, my heart's not in it because you're making me do something I didn't want to do. I'm a little fragile flower. No, Sam Raimi's a man. Sam Raimi's a man's man, and he's a professional. He's a professional. This whole idea, well, he didn't want to put Venom in it, and they said they had to put it in it, so his heart's not in it. No, no. If you're a pro, if you're a professional at what you do, you get past that and you do your job. And so, no, I don't consider. Listen, Sam Raimi is awesome. Make no mistake, but everybody, including the greatest filmmaker of all time, Steven Spielberg, everybody has a bad day at the office. Everybody does.
Don't even. Come on. It's not the time.
Okay, I won't.
I know where you're going with that. I mean, it's so obvious where you're headed.
Everybody has a bad day at the office.
And a great
facts are facts. Spider-Man 3 was Sam Raimi's bad day at the office. And he has nobody to blame but himself. And when you have a bad day at the office, you have nobody to blame yourself. When I have a bad day at the office, I have nobody to blame myself. Sam Raimi, and guess what? Everybody has it. So it's okay. But Spider-Man 3 was his. And this whole excuse campaign that fans have made over the years forever, well, it was Sony's fault. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. Because there are other directors, many other directors, where studios gave them big notes to change things that they wanted to do, swap out things they wanted to have, all that kind of stuff. And yet they went on to make great movies. And this whole narrative out there that, oh, Spider-Man 3 wasn't Sam's fault. Yes, it was. And it doesn't take one lick away from the greatness of Sam Raimi. But anyway, that's just kind of my take on it. All right, what's next?
All right, Bobby Jackson's back with a $20 super chat.
Thank you, Bobby.
Even though you'll probably be retired when it happens, I'll be expecting a special podcast admitting you were wrong when the live-action Miles Morales movie, hopefully with Lord and Miller involved, makes all the monies.
I hope so. I would love to. I mean, listen, the curse of being always right.
Oh, God, here.
Is that?
Oh, geez. No, I mean,
there's never. Listen, I was with the Miles Morales. I already thought that once. I thought Into the Spider-Verse was going to be crap. I thought it was going to be crap.
And it was.
There is nothing I love more. And it was garbage. No, there is nothing I love more than expecting and thinking maybe a movie will be bad and then going to see it and ending up loving it. There's no greater joy as a film fan. I mean, it's nice when there's a movie you have high expectations for and it's excellent. That's great. Right. That's great. But there's nothing that matches that feeling about having a movie that you think is like going to be a disaster or whatever. And you go in and you love that movie. That's a special feeling you get as a movie. That's a special kind of gratification as a movie fan. So believe me when I tell you, I am so happy that I was so wrong about Into the Spider-Verse, and I would love to be wrong about a live-action Miles Morales, but I do think, as of right now, I think it'll be a disaster. I think they're going to ruin it. I think they will ruin Miles Morales if they try to do that. I mean, not ever, but I mean, if they kill this marvelous momentum they've got going with their Spider-Verse animated universe, winning Academy Awards, making money at the box office, being hailed as some of the greatest comic book films of all time. If they do that so they can make a Miles Morales version of Morbius, it's going to be very disappointing. But I would love it if it was awesome. All right, what's next? Called
Miles Morbius.
Miles Morbius.
Morbius.
All right, Christopher Brigner writes... Fast X, Mermaid, Spider-Verse, Transformers, Flash. Why are these big films coming out so close together? They're cannibalizing each other's box offices.
History has shown there's plenty of box office money to go around this time of year. There's plenty of box office money. The school's out. Kids are out of school. people are on vacation. I mean, this is getting back to what summer movie season has been prior to 2019, right? If a movie doesn't make money, I mean, don't get me wrong. There's always going to be a degree of cannibalism. There's always going to be a degree. That's the nature of the competition. But listen, I forecasted that Little Mermaid was going to take a 65% drop in the second weekend because Spider-Verse was opening. Well, guess what? Spider-Verse made $120 million and Little Mermaid still only took a 57% drop. So there's plenty of box office money there to go around. And so, and again, it would be a different story if it was February, but in the summer season, there's more to go around. It's kind of like in the Christmas season. Remember that one year when Aquaman came out?
Right.
It was like, we called it Murderer's Row because there was like five huge films opening within like 4 weeks of each other. And a number of them did really, really well. So yeah, it is what it is. All right, what's next?
Justin Welch writes, hey, John, sorry about the Netflix Rotten Tomatoes mix-up and was just trying to think outside the box for a quick Rotten Tomatoes score lookers. Thanks for your take.
I remember you wrote something in earlier and you said Netflix, and I said they must mean Rotten Tomatoes, yeah. But what was the question?
It was about like doing a great...
Oh, yeah, should they have a third?
Yeah, third.
Yeah, so that was asked on the John Campus Show podcast. There was a third.
Right.
You know, because for a critic on Rotten Tomatoes... You basically enter, and by the way, I am a registered critic on Rotten Tomatoes, although I only actually go and register a review there maybe twice a year. But at any rate, they ask you to basically say, did you like it or did you not like it? That's simple. You can put in a score if you want, but really the main thing is, did you like it or did you not like it? And they brought up a question earlier on the podcast, like maybe they should have a third option. But that is a slippery slope. Then there's a fourth option. Then maybe a fifth option, you know, and I really like, it's the reason why I really do prefer the Rotten Tomatoes system better than say the Metacritic system, because there's a purity to it. I just want to know of all the hundreds of critics who saw it, how many of them liked it and how many of them didn't. I don't really care how much they liked it or how much they hated it. Just give me a number, which percentage of them liked it. That's all I want. And because the Metacritic score can be skewed. You know, you can get, I mentioned this before. Let's say you got three critics on Metacritic. Two of them gave it a 49 out of 100. One of them gives it 100 out of 100. Well, that means two out of the three critics didn't even like the movie, but averaging out their median score, the movie's going to get like a 70 something or a 60 plus something, right? I mean, that's misleading because two out of the three critics didn't even like it. So that's why I kind of prefer Rotten Tomatoes system and why I like the purity of the either I liked it or I didn't like it mentality to it. That's just how I like it, though. That's just me. All right, what's next?
All right. Moulin Rouge says, went to an early screening of Joyride, and not only did it semi-ruin Master Splinter, the hotel scene was better than the grapefruit scene in Girls Trip. Believe the hype. So funny, so much heart.
I
haven't seen Girls Trip.
He's saying that's even better than Girls Trip. Oh, yeah.
Joyride.
Oh, my God. You haven't seen Girls Trip?
No.
It's magnificent. It's a wonderful comedy. But Joyride, guys, I keep talking because, you know, Flash is more of the movie in the wheelhouse of most of us who watch this show.
Right.
I'm almost more excited for you guys to see Joyride than Flash. I actually think I might prefer Joyride over Flash. Mm-hmm. I love Flash, and I can't wait to watch it again. But I think if I got a call from a studio executive tonight and said, hey, come on over to the lot, but we're going to show you either Flash or Joyride. You can watch Flash again or you can watch Joyride again. I think I'm going to go watch Joyride again.
When's it out? Is it?
I'm not sure. July, maybe?
Yeah, I'm trying to see what it's going up against. Might make a good double feature or something.
Oh, my God. It's so funny. It's so freaking funny. And one of the dirtiest theatrical films I've ever seen. One of the dirtiest comedies.
It's very.
That isn't on Pornhub that I think you could see. And maybe there's an argument that maybe it could end up on Pornhub. I don't know. But it's a dirty, filthy movie, and I love my filthy, but it's funny. Oh, my God, this movie's funny. Anyway, I can't wait for you guys to watch it. All right, what's next?
Okay, we've got Yuhan who writes, just finished watching Summer Games Fest, and my heart is full of joy after seeing the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth trailer. This series is my Star Wars. Wanted to know, what's your exposure to the series?
I have no idea what we're talking
Final
about.
Final Fantasy. The Final but Fantasy. What's
oh, summer, oh, what summer is Summer Game
Fest? Summer Game Fest. I just told you guys.
Oh, that's a gaming festival?
Yeah, yeah. They it was like a, it was streaming on YouTube. It was their.
Okay, so yeah, when I was younger, like back in my college days and stuff like that, I think, what year did Final Fantasy VII come out?
Like the original?
Yeah, the original Final Fantasy VII. Because I think me and my buddies would like play Final Fantasy. I think I started playing Final Fantasy around five. And then we played six, and I think I played
97. Seven.
Yeah, I think around, yeah, I think probably Final Fantasy VII was the last one that I played. I think, really? It was only 97 that came out?
January 31st, 1997, Final Fantasy VII.
Seven, okay. So, yeah, I started playing with my buddies when I was younger than that, but then seven came along. Seven was the last one. I haven't really played any Final Fantasy since then. All right, what's next?
Okay, we've got John Lee who writes, John, did you see that Warrior TV show release trailer online?
No.
Can't wait till season three comes out, June 29th. The show has the best fight scene on TV. So is it like a spinoff of the movie Warrior?
No. Warrior is, it's a television series. It's based in San Francisco during the either late 1800s or the early 1900s. I can't remember. It's basically, and it centers around this Asian population now immigrating into the U.S., right? And it's about the gangs that form there. It's basically, it's got Game of Thrones drama with Kill Bill martial arts action. Wow. Only it's top, top notch martial arts action. Actually, the best part of that sucky Snake Eyes movie, the guy who played Storm Shadow, he's the star of the Warrior series. Dennis Zen is the guy who got me turned on to Warrior seasons one and two. And I can't remember. It's been like, what, 3 years,
that's
4 years since the last season. This show's great. It's great. I didn't know a new trailer came out, but if you guys get a chance to watch Warrior, totally should. By the way, we're going to take a second here now, guys, to take one more sponsor for today's episode of Open Mic, our friends at Manscaped. Uh-oh, Father's Day is right around the corner and you haven't gotten your dad anything yet? Don't worry. That's where our sponsors, Manscaped, come in. You and I both know he needs some serious grooming in his life, so grab your dad the Performance Package 4.0 and he'll thank you for helping him tame that beastly hair. Go to manscaped.com and use code CAMPIA for 20% off plus free shipping. Guys, I don't know if your dad's anything like mine, but where my dad lacks some hair on top of his head, believe me, he makes up for it everywhere else on his body, and Manscaped is perfect for him. Manscaped is the only men's brand dedicated to below the waist grooming and perfected their game with the Lawnmower 4.0. This is the perfect gift, presenting a sleek, well-designed, and optimized grooming kit that says your balls will thank you right on the box. Their fourth generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. This upgraded trimmer includes a multifunction on-off switch that can engage a travel lock. This is great for any guy who does a lot of traveling. It also gives you the ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. Haven't you always wanted to be able to shave your balls in the dark? And come on, guys, almost all of our dads have that nose bush sticking out of their nose, right? Well, the Weed Whacker 2.0, the nose and ear hair trimmer, is the best nose trimmer on the market and the perfect gift for your dad. Guys, that's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code CAMPIA. Don't forget, you came from your dad's balls, so this year, show your original home some love with Manscaped. And thank you to our friends at Manscaped for making balls as smooth as Serpentor. All right. With that done, what? What's wrong, Ray? Why are you crying?
What?
All right. By the way, do we got an image to look at?
Oh,
Ray said something about wanted to make Pedro Pascal Serpentor, and I have not seen it. You just gave it to Jonathan.
All
right. Oh, my God. Ray made that as we've been doing
the
show.
But it was just like a slop of whatever, you know.
Oh, hail Serpentor.
Pascentor.
Oh,
Pedro Pascentor.
What's his nickname again in Game of Thrones? The Serpent?
Yeah, the Serpent.
Yeah, the Serpent. So there you go. It was meant to be. He was born to play Serpentor.
Look at that menacing smile.
Hello, Sergeant Slaughter.
Hello, Cobra Commander.
Or is it the Viper? The Viper. That's
the Viper,
what
yes.
The Viper. That's what his
I
name
is. Nobody knows about G.I. Joe in this chat.
Probably nobody does. All right. What's next?
All right. Arthur de Montcalm writes, what if Christopher Nolan made a Marvel movie?
Then he would make a Marvel movie.
He's it would have DC. To be like some trip movie, like some trip.
Now he never would because Kevin Feige is too controlling and Christopher
Let's
Nolan.
Live in this world though. What character would you see?
Don't
it
care.
Would be like a trip one, right? Like
don't,
a trippy.
No, I mean I would
maybe
see
maybe a Doctor Strange would have been cool.
Are there any?
Nah. Doctor Strange is a little bit too trippy.
Are there any MCU characters that like mumble out or
okay, come on, bro.
Because that would be a perfect.
Really? Are you gonna keep?
And everyone's like, what is he saying?
I have no idea. By the way, what was that movie about? I don't know. But there was a lot of talking. I couldn't understand a damn thing.
It's just Tenet, all right? You guys are mad about Tenet.
About Tenet. It's terrible.
I'm pretty sure the original stuff that I saw of Bane was way worse than when they finally released
Dude,
it.
Dude, I'll tell you what. Like, I remember...
Because I remember seeing that one scene on the plane.
Before The Dark Knight Rises came out, me and about 30 other... journalists got invited down to an IMAX theater to watch an early scene of The Dark Knight Rises. This is like a couple months before the movie came out with Christopher Nolan. So it was me, about 30 other guys, Christopher Nolan, a couple of studio
30
execs.
Deep, baby.
And they played us the opening scene on the plane and all that kind of stuff, right? And none of us, nobody in that room had any idea what Bane was saying. I need an enema. It was like nobody could understand a damn thing. And I remember after this, the presentation was done, we all went out and Christopher Nolan was cool enough to hang out in the foyer there and meet everybody and talk to everybody. And like everybody's taking their turns going to talk to Christopher. And like there'd be a group of other guys over here going, did you guys understand the thing Bane said? I didn't understand a thing Bane said. Did you? No. Hey, Christopher, awesome. I mean,
I knew it.
And it looked great.
Nobody let him know the truth.
Well, who's going to go up to Christopher Nolan and say, yeah, we didn't understand a thing your villain was saying? Like, nobody.
You should have been it, John. Oh, yeah. You should have been his sound guy.
I should have been the voice of reason. Yeah. But you know what? I remember. Somebody must have said something, because when I saw it in theaters, while people still complained about it, I actually understood what Bane was saying a lot better than we did the first time we saw it, even though there's still a lot of people complaining.
Yeah, I haven't heard from that guy ever since, huh?
No, that's it. He's gone. By the way, can I just say, side note, Bane in the Harley Quinn animated show is a top three greatest character on television right now. That is one of the most hilarious. I will never not laugh at the idea. I must eat pasta to carb up for the fuck fest. It's like one of the greatest lines ever in television history.
Sounds like it belongs in Joyride.
I love Bane. I love Bane on Harley Quinn. Okay, what's next?
Okay, we've got Jedi Master Vader, you know, and then his dream cast for Fantastic Four, Doctor Doom is Liam Neeson, Mr. Fantastic, Liam Neeson, The Thing, Liam Neeson, Sue and Johnny Storm, Liam Neeson's son. Pretty good, Vader, Master of the Jedi.
I'm telling you, I want to see a coming to America version of Fantastic Four.
Eddie Murphy?
where it's either Eddie Murphy or some actor playing all the roles. That would be a masterpiece.
That would be great, actually.
It would be considered revolutionary filmmaking
if
they could do that. And Liam Neeson, the Liam Neeson's is the guy to do it. It was Liam Neeson is the guy.
No, it's Eddie Murphy. I told you.
Or it could be Eddie Murphy. I'd watch that too.
Yeah.
I'd totally watch it. Put in Arsenio Hall there
Fantastic
as Galactus.
Norbit. Bit.
As Norbit.
No.
Right. What's next?
That got him. He got him.
All right. Well, guess what? The Master's back. And I can't confirm this, but heard that the Flash film pays tribute to other DC properties, I guess. Can't wait to see them pay respect to the GOAT of DC TV shows, Gotham Knights. Vader, you're kind of going off the rails here, man.
Yeah. As far as the first part goes, I don't know that it does pay tribute to other things.
I saw it throughout the whole thing, man. Even if it's just that type of movie. Someone said in one of the reviews, they said it's filled with nostalgia. If you like that sort of thing,
that's Michael Keaton. I mean, that's just having Michael Keaton there is filled with nostalgia.
Yeah, but man, didn't you think of like the old Flash TV show?
No.
Not at all?
No.
Like, especially with the bolts in it?
No.
You just don't like...
I mean, I thought of Man of Steel. I mean, obviously, because there's a lot of Man of Steel scenes in there, but Michael Keaton's very nostalgic. I didn't really get it for other things.
No?
No, not really. Did I miss something?
I don't know.
You missed the whole thing, anything, I think.
Though. Yeah, I got to be careful not to spoil things.
Yeah, you guys are going to be like, no, because that one scene where...
All right, what's next?
Dave Montcalm wrote, do you know the TV series, The Untouchables? Yeah, which dates from the years... Oh, wait. Okay, different one. Okay.
Not the movie.
1960 to 65, because there was one in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah, that was kind of a play on that. The Kevin Costner Untouchables, by the way, is brilliant. It's really, really great. There are several. Like, you're lucky if your movie has, like, a single big iconic scene mm-hmm. that everybody can think about. Untouchables has, like, three of them that are really great. The Robert De Niro walking around the table with the other mobsters, and he's got a baseball bat over his head. Yeah. He goes, team, yeah. team. And then he takes the baseball bat and bashes the guy's head in.
Oh, okay, no.
It's like, bleh. But also Sean Connery talking about Italians and saying, as an Italian myself, he says, leave it to a WOP to bring a knife to a gunfight. It's like one of the great lines. Sean Connery saying it is like one of the great lines. It is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful movie. There's a great scene of it. Andy Garcia in there. If you haven't seen The Untouchables, I know he was talking about the television show that preceded that, but if you have not seen the movie Untouchables, it's a great film. Treat yourself and make sure you check it out.
Surprise you that I haven't seen that movie?
I'm not surprised at all. You totally should.
But did he have a question about the series, though? Or that,
no, he's just asking if we've seen it. Okay. That's all. All right, what's next?
All right. Arthur's back, plus Spider-Man No Way Home did the same at the end of the movie. What could be the relationship with the multiverse?
Was that a continuation from that, a previous...
No, this is different. Unless...
Can you read the question again? I'm not really sure what it was they were asking.
I mean, it seems like it's out of order, but I don't know what it ties to because it's not ordered. So, plus, Spider-Man No Way Home did the same at the end of the movie. What
did what the relationship at the end of the movie?
Well, who's the writer?
Arthur. I mean, I'd have to look.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm not really quite sure what it is you're asking.
So he writes here, do you sometimes talk about films from other countries?
When they become relevant to our audience, we will. But honestly, on this show, and I've had this debate with a lot of people all the way back to the AMC days. It is not my job to promote film. I'm a fan. My job is to talk about the films that we are all talking about, right? And what I have found in the past is that when we talk about smaller films, films that are overseas that either none of our audiences have watched or none of our audiences even have access to watch, all we're really doing is alienating our audience. So we don't often talk about it unless it's connected to a relevant subject of the day. Then we will. Otherwise, we're just leaving a lot of people out of the conversation. All right, what's next?
Okay, so this was out of order. So he's talking about the symbiote at the end of...
Oh, okay.
So do you remember Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3, the sample of Venom's symbiote that Professor Connors is examining? So I guess that was like, was that at the post?
No, that's not connected in any way, though. Yeah. I don't think that's connected in any way. It's a good thought, but I don't actually think it's connected in any way. All right. Yeah, sometimes the thing will send in the questions out of order for some reason. Sorry about that. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, it causes that confusion. All right, what's next?
All right. Donaldo writes, have you seen the new trailer for the next Mortal Kombat game?
Yeah, I have not. Isn't that like Mortal Kombat 1? Isn't that what it's called or something like that? Have you watched it, right?
Summer Game Fest, they just showed the first gameplay.
And?
It looks pretty good.
Really? Because when we looked at it, we were like, oh, it looks like
Tekken. Yeah, the characters, they don't look like as Tekken. Real. As previous, but the even fighting looks crazy.
Even the mechanics look
and
like
the Johnny Cage. If I after we're done here, I'm gonna show you a picture of the Johnny Cage face, and I know you know an actor that looks like him
because he
looks
so familiar. I couldn't figure it out.
Is it Carl
I
couldn't Urban?
Figure it out. I don't know.
It's not Urban.
But I wanted to say it looked kind of like Glenn Powell and the guy who's supposed to be playing him put together.
By the way, I don't know if you've answered that before. So you liked the Mortal Kombat movie more than I did, I think.
Yeah. The first.
So they announced that Carl Urban's going to be Johnny Cage.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
Glenn Powell, baby. That was my Johnny Cage.
Okay, yeah, but Glenn Powell's not.
But I'm not too familiar with Carl Urban. I've only seen him in Judge Dredd, and I liked him in that, but you can't really get
anything. You saw him in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, that's.
Yeah, that's him.
What's that? He's the Horse Lord.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, Johnny Cage, I don't see it yet, but I'm pretty sure he could pull it off.
Did you see like the new Star Trek movies with Chris Pine?
Yeah.
Because he plays Bones.
He plays Dr. Bones. Yeah, you'd never bring that. Yeah. And dude, you still haven't watched The Boys.
No.
You got to watch The Boys.
I know I got it. I watched the Diabolical.
Forget that. You got to watch The Boys. Got to watch The Boys. All right, what's next?
All right, Lavartov writes, J. Crew just rewatched Punisher, and my, it's so good. Bernthal gave new life to that character. Impeccable. What is your favorite moment of him as Punisher?
I remember I actually think I liked season two better than season one. I don't know. It's been years since I've watched it. It's actually been a beat since that show was out. I
got one.
What's that?
The prison scene.
When he's in with Kingpin?
Yeah.
That's a good scene.
And they try to kill him and he just destroys those dudes.
That's a really, really good scene, actually. I like that one a lot too. And you know, and I love Bernthal and I really love both season ones and two, but to me, Punisher Warzone. Why am I freezing on the name of the actor? Ray Stevenson is actually still my favorite Punisher. And I love John Bernthal. Don't get me wrong, but Ray Stevenson is still my favorite Punisher.
That's a great take. Right, you know what's funny? I just realized that both that Punisher and then the Netflix Daredevil had great jail scenes. Remember that one shot? Yep. That tracking shot? Oh.
They both did. You know what? I've liked all the Punishers, other than maybe Dolph Lundgren's. But other than that, yeah. All right, what's next?
All right. Fanjecture writes, did you see the AMC Optimus Prime popcorn bucket?
Well, we weren't at AMC. We were at a Cinemark.
Yeah, the greatest theater we've ever seen.
That was a good... The only problem is it's like a 25-minute drive for us to get to that theater. So, meanwhile, it's a 5-minute drive for us to get to the AMC this closer. But I have not seen the popcorn bucket.
Wait a minute.
So, I'll be honest with you. I never care about popcorn buckets. I never buy them.
Someone you know does.
I know my wife Anne loves getting them. But to me, the thing is, where do they go? Like, you get it, then what?
This is interesting.
Like, you hold it for a few days and then you probably throw it out. And what's interesting?
It's actually the full truck.
No.
It goes into
what?
Okay.
Okay. See, look, okay.
Hang on.
Okay, I'll get this one.
Look, see? And you pop the top there.
What?
It's like a tray.
Thank you for making me spend money.
All right, now, okay. I just finished talking about, who cares about the popcorn buckets? You buy them and then you throw them out in a few days.
But that's
I want that one.
Cool, man.
That looks amazing.
Maybe I didn't want you to mention that.
Oh, my God. Okay, now I want to go see that. I want to get that.
So you put the popcorn in the back?
Right here in the trailer. See? He even has, like, the windshield flares. Nice.
Okay, yeah. I got to get that.
You know, we could watch it again.
Now, if it actually transforms.
Oh, man.
Oh, now. Oh, the John Campia version, huh?
All right, what's next?
All right, we've got Optimus Prime. Oh, speaking of Optimus Prime Rib, what are some of your favorite Dion Waiters heat check?
I have no idea what we're talking about.
Dion Waiters
heat check. Performances in a movie. An actor with a small role, but who absolutely steals every second.
Oh, that's easy for me. 310 to Yuma, Ben.
Not Shaw.
Plays Archangel in the one X-Men movie.
Yep.
Ben. Well, guys, help me out in the live chat. Ben Foster.
Foster. I'm saying Shaw.
Ben Foster in 310 to Yuma is one of the greatest examples of that ever. Here he is in this movie with two acting icons of our generation, Christian Bale and Russell Crowe. And Ben Foster steals that movie with the few scenes that he's in. That to me is one of the greatest scene stealing ever. Do you guys have anything like
that? Well, I mean, I'm not saying it's like the greatest ever, but let's just like recently, I really liked, it was such a tiny role, but Marlon Wayans' role in Air.
It was so
pivotal because he talked him into like going for it, you know, Matt Damon's character.
Yeah. When they're sitting in the bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He said he had that note, but he was like kind of lying. He was like, I don't get that note.
Ryan Reynolds in Hobbs and Shaw.
What?
Ryan Reynolds in Hobbs and Shaw.
He was in
it. Totally steals his show when he's in those.
I didn't know he was in it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's in there. Him, Kevin Hart, they're both in it.
Yeah. Maybe we should start watching these fast movies.
What's next?
All right, Arthur's back. If there's no artists, there's no producers. If there's no producers, artists are still there. So I guess that's kind of going in regards to the strikes.
If there's no artists.
So the producers, I guess is what he's saying, the producers rely on the artists more than artists rely on. I mean, artists.
No, they don't. Artists have nothing to be in if there's no producers.
Artists can keep making art, but they're not going to get the big like the pay, like that they need the production, the producers to bring the pay through the, you know what I mean? Like you're going to be doing free art.
Without the producers, there are no projects.
Yeah.
If there's no artists, guess what? The producers will make animated movies or something like that. If there's no actors, they'll go make animated movies. No, without the producers, there is nothing. See, everybody's an artist, right? Everybody's an artist. You know what? The one thing all artists have in common, they need somebody else to pay for their art. That's the one thing about that. The one thing, I think Aaron might've been the one who told me that, Aaron being an actress herself, says the one, you know, artists are wide variety. We're all very diverse artists, but there's one thing artists all have in common.
They need money.
We need somebody else to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. We need somebody else to pay for the art we want to make. And that's no more true anywhere than in the movies. It really is. All right, what's next?
Okay, we've got John Redcorn, over under 25%. Tom Hardy appears in Beyond the Spider-Verse. Tom Hardy, was he in any of the other ones?
He probably meant Tom Holland.
Yeah.
I
would actually say there'd be a higher chance of Tom Hardy than Tom Holland because, you know, Venom is a part of the Sony-verse and all that kind of
stuff.
That's true. Yeah.
Somebody asked me almost an identical question about Tom Holland the other day, but he said 10%. I said over 10, but I'll go under 25. So I would say over 10, under 25. What am I looking at there?
That is the Johnny Cage from Mortal Kombat 1. Look at his face. He kind of looks like Elon Musk a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh.
That actually looks photo real.
So yeah, that's the Johnny Cage from Mortal Kombat.
Sorry, guys. You can't see it, but Rachel showed me a picture of the new Johnny Cage. All right. What's next?
Okay. King Daddy Goat writes, Holland seems to want out. What's next after him?
He doesn't want out.
No, he wants a break.
He wants a break. He's going to take a year off, and they're at least a year away from shooting a new Spider-Man movie anyway. So, yeah, he doesn't want out of Spider-Man.
And imagine how much work he put into this Fred Astaire movie.
It's got to be incredible. You know,
all the dancing was probably done by him.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He's a legit awesome dancer.
If there's something about this dude that he's really good at, he's really good on his feet.
Yeah. All right, what's next?
All right. This is from John Redcorn again. If Indy 5 flops, does Mangold keep that Star Wars film?
Absolutely. Well, even if the Indiana Jones film is bad, that's one bad day at the office. He's got a laundry list of great films that he's directed. So, Not to mention, he kind of came in a little late in the game. Remember, they had already been developing the movie for a long time, and Spielberg was going to direct at one point, and they had already managed or whatever. So, even if Indiana Jones, if it's the worst film ever made in history, maybe it could change things up. But even if it's like quite bad, I still don't think it changes anything about Star Wars. The thing that could change it about a Star Wars film is that I don't think Kathleen Kennedy is going to be there anymore. And most of the things Kathleen Kennedy announces never happen. So
right. I don't think it has anything to do with him.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with him.
That's like saying Lucasfilm will never work with Ron Howard again. Yeah, they would.
Yeah, of course they would. Yep.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
Okay, Mike Thompson writes, did you know that Pitch Meeting creator, writer, and soul actor Ryan George is from Montreal, Quebec, making him a good Canadian kid?
Yes, I didn't know he was from Montreal. I knew he was Canadian. I didn't know he was from Montreal. Love his work on Pitch Meeting. Love his work on Pitch Meeting. I absolutely adore Pitch Meeting. Ray and I were having a bit of a debate about that the other day because my favorite Pitch Meetings are the ones that are movies that I like. Like, I love it when he starts making fun of the movies that I like. Don't get me wrong. I also like when he makes fun of movies that I don't like, but it's actually my favorite when he's kind of tearing apart the movies.
Yeah, I don't mind
I
watching the ones I don't like.
He's really good. Yeah, he's really, really, good really quite good. Does, yes. And you know what's funny? If you had asked me like a couple of years ago, I probably would have thought like the shtick of it would have worn off pretty quick.
Oh, no.
But it hasn't. I still love watching.
It's all about.
I still love watching those videos.
Yeah, the writing and that.
And even how many, we all know the Barely an Inconvenience. Oh, really? Even though we know that's coming every single video, I still love it. It is not worn off on me. I still get a really big kick out of it.
Like it.
Name
me something else on there that's like him.
But here's the thing. Anne did this to me the other day. I can't even remember which movie it was. But Anne came to me, she said, okay, John. I'm like, yeah, baby. She goes, remember this movie? I'm like, yeah. And she said, what did you say about it? I said, well, I said this. She goes, right. And what did you say about this aspect of that movie? I said, well, I said this. She goes, right. And what did you say about this aspect of that movie? I said, well, I said this. She says, yeah, okay, now come watch the new the newest pitch meeting. I'm like, all right. And like he said eight of the things that I had said about that same movie.
Because both are like, Canadian.
Huh.
He's a Canadian.
Huh. I don't know. I don't know if he watches our, I don't even know if he knows we exist or not, but I do. I am a big fan of that channel, actually. Yeah. I really, really am. I love watching his stuff. And it just makes it all the better that he's a good Canadian kid.
Yep.
And is that it?
That's all.
All right, guys. And that'll do it for today's installment of Open Mic. Thank you so much for being here and making this show part of your day. Big special thank you to all you guys who sent in those questions, either through our tip link, which, by the way, you can send in a question anytime now between now and the next Open Mic, simply at streamelements.com/JohnCampia/tip, or sent one in using the Super Chat feature if you were watching live. Number one, because you gave us great fun things to talk about. But number two, you supported our channel as you did it, and all of us involved here, thank you guys so very much for your support. That'll do it for us for now, guys. Don't forget, we have a daily podcast called the John Campia Show Podcast. Go and find us on, by the way, go and find us on your favorite podcasting app, whether it's Apple, Podbean, whatever. But yesterday, actually, we had 2 days in a row, I found out that we had set record numbers for the biggest day of downloads we've ever had on Spotify.
Yes, thank you.
Now, of course, that has a lot to do with the fact that we're now doing it all podcast, but the fact that the numbers keep growing, thank you guys so much for that support. It's been pretty great. It's actually, we've got a little bit of an announcement coming up that's kind of been made possible because the transition over to podcast has been so successful. We'll talk about that probably next week sometime. We'll let you guys know as soon as the paper is signed and the ink is dry. But anyway, guys, thanks so much. So for guys in the room, Ray Ora, Jonathan Voico, Pedro Pascal as Supentor. My name is John Campia. And until next time, my friends, bye-bye.